We went out into Sydney area. We tried to recruit out there. We had difficulty in getting accommodation. That was one of the problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, where did you have accommodation? Was it the old train station?
There was nothing there. As a matter of fact, we out in Sydney, we had accommodation. There were two chaps worked at the experimental farm, a chap by the name of Calvert. He'd been with the medical corps, and a chap by the name of Bosher. Mm-hmm. And first of all, they just trained wherever they could in someone's backyard.
There was no accommodation? No hall? No church? Nothing?
Nope. And then finally we did get a hall, which is now the Legion Hall out, mm-hmm. I don't know what it was, Sancha, I think it was called, on Mills Road.
Mills Road.
It's out the other side of the airport. It borders the airport. Mm-hmm. And runs from Patricia, where the little church did, Holy Trinity Church.
Mm-hmm. It used to cross the highway at one time, but it's blocked off now.
Yeah. That's right. You're right. That's it. Yeah.
And it was there.
Yeah.
I know what you mean, yeah.
It's about halfway between
between Pat Bay and the highway.
Pat Bay and the, yeah, the present highway.
And that Legion Hall that is there now was there in
That hall was there, and I think it was S-A-N-C-H-A, whatever that meant. It was some Saanich Horticultural Association,
mm-hmm.
or something like that. But anyway, that was the hall that we, and we had something, a little quartermaster store in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they did their training.
Did you have trouble recruiting them?
A little, yeah. We didn't do too well in the Sydney Saanich area, the North Saanich.
Any reasons for that? Because it was a good population base to draw from.
It was lack of a good leader. We had Calvert and Bosher. They were good chaps, but they weren't spark plugs,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. You know, they just
weren't dynamic enough.
No. And when we had Jackie Bryden came in, and he was the subaltern officer for 14th Platoon, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had one at Royal Oak. We had a platoon at Royal Oak. And we had it sort of fluctuated, you know. We couldn't get a permanent officer there.
So there's no one to really center around.
That's right. There was nothing to focus on. But out we had a platoon out in Souk,
mm-hmm.
and that was a big platoon. I forget how many. It was a lot more than, it was an oversized platoon.
Mm-hmm.
And when we held our first annual inspection of this D company, we had more men on parade than a company straight.
Mm-hmm. Where would you hold a company parade?
In the armory.
On Bay Street?
Yeah.
In your 2IC to BAP team in the company, what were your duties? How did you function? What did you do?
I looked after the as the 2IC. I had the stores with a company sergeant, quartermaster sergeant.
Mm-hmm. And would these stores be at the armory?
Yeah, they were in the armory, and our company headquarters was in the armory.
Mm-hmm.
We had a couple of rooms in the armory.
Mm-hmm. Did your job entail traveling to the various platoons? Would you say be at each platoon, or one platoon each parade night?
We tried to do that. We tried to get out. Well, so it would be four platoons, we had eight parades a month.
Mm-hmm.
But we worked in the company headquarters one night. We did administration.
Mm-hmm.
And the other night we went out and visited one of the platoons.
And would you and Bapti go together?
Yes.
Would you drive one of your own cars, or?
Bapti had his own car. I didn't have a car at that time. Couldn't mm-hmm. afford one.
You were teaching this time, I guess?
No. Oh, 30? Yes, I was teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Victoria.
And was teaching not a very high-paying profession at that time?
$110 a month.
Is that about average for the time?
Yes, it was, it was enough to keep the wolf from the door, and that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you didn't get paid for the 2 months during the summer. was a 10 months salary. Mm-hmm. And then when the Depression came on, I think it would be about 1932, the teachers voluntarily made a contribution. 3% of our salary was given to the city to assist in the relief program. Mm-hmm. And then the following year again, we gave another 3%.
So 6%?
So it came to, well, it was
about 5 cents, wasn't it?
Compounded. Mm-hmm. But, and that was...
Well, how did the Depression affect the two battalions? And I suppose I should ask the 2nd Battalion, because you were involved with that.
Well, it was tough going because of lack of funds. I had men that would come to me. In fact, in that 1930 camp, four men came to me and said, I can't go.
Just couldn't justify leaving their jobs?
Some of them weren't working. They were on relief. And they couldn't go because they didn't have any boots and couldn't afford to buy them. Mm-hmm. And I made a deal with a chap named Christie who had a shoe store in Government Street.
Is this Sergeant Christie, who is a member of the battalion?
No, he was just a friend of the family. Mm-hmm. And he said, you, anybody, if you want, he said, send them in to me with a chit. Just say, please issue this man with a pair of shoes, boots. And he had a pair of boots that were a good pattern. They were a military pattern boot. Mm-hmm. Looked very similar to the boot that we called the Kitchener. It was a British pattern boot. Mm-hmm. And they were turned out by Leckie. And for $4.50 a pair, I fitted out four men that so they could go to camp. That came out of my pocket.
Mm-hmm. And you were never reimbursed for that?
Oh, no. I didn't expect it.
Mm-hmm. So these are men of your company and you wanted them there. What sort of work did the battalion do for the community, and if not for the community, for at least members of the battalion to help out during the Depression?
Damn little. We couldn't. We had no... If we could find a job for somebody, even if it were only a temporary job, I had the nominal role, and I'd someone say, I'd like a fellow to come and do something for me for 4 or 5 days. It would just be personal contact. Mm-hmm. Then I'd call on one of these chaps and say, here's a job for you for 3 or 4 days, or 4 or 5 days. And boy, were they thankful to get it.
How many men, I guess that's not a very good question to ask, were there many men in the battalion who were unemployed? Was it a widespread thing?
Oh, yes. Yeah, at that time. Well, in 33 and 34, those were tough years, really tough.
How did you fare through it as a teacher?
Hmm?
How did you fare through it as a teacher? Were you ever threatened with loss of your job?
No, I was never threatened with loss of my job. I just had the job and I didn't worry about whether I was going to lose it or not. I just carried out and did my job the best I could, the best of my ability. And apparently it satisfied the school authorities because during those years, that's the time I started to take extramural classes to improve my
standing
in school. So that's when I went to Vic College. Mm-hmm. And that was a bit of a chore, because I was 2 nights at the militia, 2 nights a week at Victoria College, and then when I was taking biology, Saturday mornings too for lab work, under Jeffrey A. Cunningham, who has his name up there at the Cunningham Building at UVic.
Yes, yeah, sure.
Well, that's the chap. Mm-hmm.
It got to be quite a grind, didn't it?
Oh, yes. Well, that's why in 1936, in 35, our first child was born.
Well, when did you marry?
I married in 32.
And this is your 50th year, which will get on record.
Okay. Yeah, we had our 50th wedding anniversary about 3 weeks ago.
It was August?
Second of August.
Mm. Congratulations again for the time.
Oh, thank you very much. So in 1936, in the meantime, Bapti had taken command of the battalion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Martin was command of the regiment, and there was separate commanders for both battalions
at
this time.
Yeah. Kingham commanded the first, but no, Brooke Stevenson commanded the first battalion, mm-hmm. and Walter Baptie commanded the second.
Mm-hmm. How old was Baptie?
He was 17 in 1900.
When he was in the Boer War.
In Boer War, he's a boy. So.
He was in his 50s, mid-50s.
Yeah, he was.
Was that not somewhat old, or?
You wouldn't know. He was in great physical condition, and he kept himself he was just sinews of steel, so to speak.
Even in Dr. Roy's book.
That's right.
I read an anecdote in one of Dr. Roy's books about in 1929 on the Maple Bay exercise, or 20 or 30.
Yeah.
On a route march, he was leading a column, and the men were looking awfully tired.
Yeah.
And he led about 8 officers, yourself included, in an 8-some reel.
That's the type of fellow he was.
He joined in with you and...
Sure. And not only that...
You learned Highland dancing.
Oh, sure. That was one of the things that we were taught in the mess.
Would you dance with your hands above your head?
Normally, it was on the hips.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, my experience
sort
from
of
this,
arms akimbo.
Yeah. Well, in the film, Tunes of Glory.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
How the new commanding officer chastises the men for dancing with their hands above their head, which is not proper style.
Well, that's the women's. Women do that. The man dances with his hands, arms akimbo.
Right.
So if you're doing an 8-some reel, when you're doing the do-si-do, as they call it, or the chain,
mm-hmm.
The only time you could raise your arms when you're in the center, when you're strutting like a peacock.
Did you like Highland dancing?
Yes, enjoyed it very much.
Yeah. I think you're telling me about 1935-36, your first child was born.
Yes. Well, and I was taking this extramural work at Victoria College, and I found it was just too much.
Mm-hmm.
So in 36, I went on supplementary reserve.
Which meant what in real terms?
Well, you're subject to call out.
Mm-hmm.
In
time of war or emergency?
Emergency. Aid to the civil power or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you keep close ties? Would you go down to the mess on, say, a Saturday afternoon?
No, the messes were never open on Saturdays. The messes were only open on parade nights.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, of course, when I went on reserve, I was probably one of the few qualified machine gunners
on
the Vickers.
You had a Vickers?
Oh, yes. The 2nd Battalion became a machine gun battalion,
mm-hmm.
and they were equipped with the Vickers machine
gun. How many Vickers would you have in the battalion?
Well, first of all, we had one.
Got to start somewhere, I guess.
So then they finally got enough to send, I think, enough... If I recall, we had 8,
mm-hmm.
and that was 2 guns per company.
Mm-hmm.
And then they reorganized the companies. I forget what it was, and they put in a headquarters company, and which had the support company with it.
Mm-hmm.
But until that time, we were a machine gun company, and.
That was sort of an antiquated concept, wasn't it? Having a platoon as nothing but a machine gun battalion as nothing but a machine gun battalion. It was sort of a World War I concept.
Well, no, they carried right through. They had machine gun battalions in World War II.
Mm-hmm. But I was under the impression that that was the eventual reason for the disbandment of the battalion because of its specialization.
Yeah.
In 43 or whatever.
Yeah, 43.
Tell me, when you were mulling over the decision to go on supplementary reserve, was it partially because you couldn't give enough time to your family?
That's one.
Mm-hmm. An important consideration.
Excuse me. That was one, and the other was the pressure of teaching and trying to improve my educational standard at the same time. I had to make the choice, and I thought, well...
It was a realistic one to make at the time.
Well, certainly.
Yeah.
And so... When I went on reserve, I didn't know it at the time, but I was posted to the Reserve Regimental Depot. Mm-hmm. And I was put on there as adjutant of the Reserve Regimental Depot.
With an acting rank of major?
No, captain. Mm-hmm. And so when the war broke out, I got a call from Colonel Kingham, who was then commanding the regiment.
The regiment.
And he said, this was on September the 6th, night of September the 5th, he phoned me, and he said, we're going to organize the regiment, Reserve Regimental Depot. And he said, you're on the list where you report to the armories tomorrow morning, which I did. And I was vice principal of the George J. School at the time. So I phoned the principal and told him that I wouldn't be in the morning. I was going
down to the armories.
And he said, well, I'll phone...
Had classes started that time?
Pardon?
Had classes started at that time?
It must have that year, because I guess September, Labor Day was close to the first of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I registered the class on the 5th. And I think that's when it opened.
Mm-hmm.
So Labor Day must have been the 4th of September.
Tell me, when war did break out, I know Canada didn't declare war until the 10th, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You must have been thinking that you would be called up soon. Did you contact anyone about this?
No.
You were waiting for them to do the calling?
Yes, the only contact I had was with Colonel Kingham when he asked me to come in on the 6th of September.
Mm-hmm. Which you did.
But they had organized before then, and they had the Canadian, the 1st Battalion, I don't know about the 2nd, but the 1st Battalion certainly had, on August the 26th, they started to man the vital points,
mm-hmm.
Vulnerable points, because I know the Bamfield Cable Station was one.
I wanted to ask you about that. Why would they send the 1st Battalion platoon? It was under Crabtree eventually.
Yeah.
He was up there. Mm-hmm. To an area whose jurisdiction was 2nd Battalion. Like it was Port Alberni, very close to Port Alberni. Who supposedly had a company of their own.
Well, but the 2nd Battalion was manning vulnerable points up and down the island too.
As well.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So it was sort of spreading out the management as well as I could.
Yeah, because I know that Art Plows was 2nd Battalion, and he must have relieved. And I know Tommy McEwen went out, too. So he must have relieved 1st Battalion, too. And then 1st Battalion came in and concentrated at Otter Point. But they had detachments out on detached duty at various vulnerable points.
Mm-hmm. So what did you find when you went to the armory?
Well, when I went down to the armory the next morning, I found the commanding officer of the reserve depot was Major Jack Gray.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a quartermaster. And we set ourselves up to recruit. And we recruited quite a number of recruits for the 1st Battalion.
Were there many men on the regimental reserve strength?
Not men.
Most officers.
The only officers were on a reserve.
And what were the strengths, respectively, of the two battalions at this time, approximately? Were they terribly low?
The 1st Battalion, I think the 2nd Battalion had greater
manpower.
The 2nd Battalion would be about, I would say, just taking an educated guess, between 250 and 300.
Mm-hmm.
And the 1st Battalion would be probably between 200 and 250.
So you had a lot of recruiting to do.
Oh, yes. Oh, my, yes.
Because
a battalion at that time on war establishment was 817 for a... for a Highland unit.
For a Highland unit.
Yeah, they got 7 or 8 extra people for pipes and drums.
Mm-hmm.
For a Highland unit.
And did you have men flocking down to the armory?
Oh, yes. We had them coming in. Men came in from, way up north, came down and joined the Scottish and
Did you accept everyone, or did you weed people out?
We had a board of officers, medical officers, who boarded people, and quite a few were boarded out.
Mm-hmm.
And these teams, I think we had about three sets of medical board people. There were three medical officers to each team, three teams of them.
And I suppose they were kept rather busy.
Yeah, they were.
Mm-hmm.
And this went on until October the 18th. And at that, just before that, we were told that they were not going to do any more recruiting.
You were up to full strength?
No. But there was to be no recruiting. They didn't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
The supply wasn't available in Ottawa, and they didn't have the money to take on any more recruits at that time.
Were the recruits?
And then they decided they were going to make this regimental depot into a district depot.
Mm-hmm. To service other regiments?
Yeah, right. For the whole of MD-11.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what happened. We folded up, and the district depot came in, number 11 district depot came in with Major G.G. Aitken as O.C.
Did you have anything to do with this?
No. All I did was fold up. We folded up the regimental depot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sat on the sidelines, and the 2nd Battalion came into Otter Point, Work Point.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to see the commanding officer of the 2nd Battalion, and he said, yes, I have a vacancy for you. And he says, you can go up to Prince Rupert as 2IC of B Company. And so I said, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But when I said, well, when do I go? The commanding officer, who was Parker of the 2nd Battalion, made application for a travel warrant for me. And MD-11 says, sorry, old boy, we haven't got the money.
Mm-hmm.
They were still on the peacetime budget.
Mm-hmm.
And
wouldn't they make allowances?
Nothing had been done to find the money. And they were working on the 1938-39 budget.
Surely, didn't they have any sense at all that war changed everything?
This was, to me, it was just so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So the result was that I couldn't go up to Prince Rupert as 2IC of B Company.
Mm-hmm. Could you go if you paid your own way?
I wasn't going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
No, sir. If they didn't have the money to send me, I... But, I stayed with the 2nd Battalion and sort of was a supernumerary adjutant.
Mm-hmm.
I helped the new adjutant get his feet in the mud. Or get his ass in the saddle. And then I got a call from MD-11, Work Point. They wanted to establish a recruit training depot.
Mm-hmm.
So I organized this recruit training depot at Work Point.
Mm-hmm.
And I operated it until, I guess, the end of July.
1940?
Yeah.
Would this have been late October or November?
No, I went to the 2nd Battalion in December, 2nd of December, I think it was. Stayed with them until either late February, or I think we organized in March, this district training depot. Or,
mm-hmm.
And I stayed with that until I got a call to go down to join 6th Brigade headquarters in 2nd Division.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down to Shiloh.
And was the Canadian Scottish in 6th Brigade?
No.
Who were the regiments?
In 6th Brigade at that time, there was the Calgary Highlanders, the South Saskatchewan Regiment, and the Camerons of Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
And,
in actual fact, the Canadian Scottish were in 3rd Division.
3rd Division, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they were in Canada until the end of 41.
Yeah.
But but we went over in 40.
Mm-hmm. You were, you said, in training, this training depot until July of 40.
Yeah.
What did you do? Did you design a training program for them?
With the help of some of the permanent force instructors that were there, I had a very good chap by the name of Spears,
mm-hmm.
Sandy Spears, and I also had a very good instructor by the name of Bates, A.A. Bates. I had some of the others that had been sergeant major instructors. They were older men, Patricias,
mm-hmm.
and they just carried on giving basic instruction under just, I was the just sort of the supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
But we organized a training program, and it was 6 weeks.
It was pretty intensive stuff.
Oh, it was, yeah. It was six weeks, and we had it organized so that we had a route march of 3 miles the first week, 6 miles the second week.
This is full kit, full pack?
No, just light pack, just the haversack and mm-hmm. and but the rifle. They carried the rifle with them.
They were all outfitted with Lee Enfield?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we, then the last 2 weeks we did 18-mile route marches for the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Would this be along a road?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And we did a little bit of skirmishing, you know, just sort of following whistle signals.
Mm-hmm. Was the emphasis on physical fitness or on military indoctrination?
No, the emphasis was on just basic training, on mostly formation training, what we used to call square bashing,
mm-hmm.
or rabble crushing. And well, we did it. They also did a classification, a rifle classification. We went out and did a classification at Heels. So that at the end of 6 weeks, they were supposed to be and have enough initial training to be able to take their place in a battalion and know how to form fours and so on.
Mm-hmm. Who are you training them for?
Well, I had the 1st and 2nd Battalion Scottish. The C-4th decided to do their own training, and they were allowed to get away with it. I had the Irish, Duke of Connaught's own rifles.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the Vancouver infantry units. There was an infantry training center.
What sort of numbers did you train in the period you were there?
I think it was about 100 in each intake.
Mm-hmm. And how many intakes did you have?
Well, we had a new intake each week.
Mm-hmm. So you were there 6 months?
Yeah. But no, 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of 6 weeks, by the end of 6 weeks, I think we had 500.
Mm-hmm.
But then they started to move out through the
system.
Yeah. And we had they were building buildings as fast as they could along just on the edge of Work Point Camp on Macaulay Plains.
Mm-hmm.
And as these buildings were being built, we were filling them up with recruits.
How did the news of Dunkirk affect morale, or did it?
Well, I wasn't here at the time of Dunkirk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I wasn't in Victoria. Where the heck was I? June 1940, wasn't it? June 1940, I was at Shiloh.
That's where you went,
yeah.
Upon leaving. That was 6th Brigade.
That's right.
Okay.
And I went under, it was a Brigadier Sergeant who asked for me.
He had been an officer in the Canadian Scottish one time, hadn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And he was now Brigadier Sergeant. And you were made what?
I was captain, and I was given the responsibility of a anti-tank company, anti-tank company.
Have you ever done any anti-tank work before?
No, didn't know anything about it.
Mm.
And just as well, because it was a stillborn child anyway. Before I got overseas, they had disbanded the infantry anti-tank company. And
was this a company attached straight to brigade?
Yes, it was. It was made up of three platoons, one platoon from each battalion. And it was to be the anti-tank protection
mm-hmm.
for our brigade, which was absolutely useless.
It must have been a cumbersome way to deal with it.
Oh, it was most awkward. And the thing that they were going to be equipped was with a 2-pounder quick firing gun,
mm-hmm.
which
a little pop gun.
Yeah. I saw them. The French Foreign Legion, when they came back from Norway, went into a barracks at in Aldershot,
mm-hmm.
and we were next door to them. And I went over there, and they brought all their equipment out with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I got an opportunity to look at these things.
You had not had them in Canada. You just planned.
They had one, and that the artillery had it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it in Shiloh, one in Shiloh. But it had not then become an infantry weapon.
Mm. What was your impression of it when you saw it?
Shocking. Scared me to death.
What did the Frenchies say about it?
They said they were ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
Ineffective. So that disappeared, and then, of course, the battalions were given, when they got their support companies, they were given an anti-tank platoon.
Equipped with Boyce anti-tank rifles?
First of all, and then of course they got artillery. They had a 6-pounder first, I think, and then they went up to a 17-pounder.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Did they not use Piats eventually?
Oh yes, they used those too, but the battalions each had a platoon of an anti-tank platoon, which actually it was artillery. It wasn't...
It was like a field gun more than anything.
Oh yes, it was a field gun. Looked something like an 88, German 88. That was a squeeze bore.
But so when did you come to 6th Brigade? The summer of 1940?
Yeah, June 1940.
Okay. And when did you say the brigade left to go overseas, late 1940?
Yes, I went over on the advance party.
Mm-hmm.
And
along with Sergeant? Sergeant
went? No, Sergeant remained with the brigade. And the brigade didn't arrive in England until, I think it was late in December,
mm-hmm.
1940.
Okay, now at this time had the idea of the anti-tank company that had expired, it was no longer in the boards.
It happened while we were on our way overseas.
Mm-hmm. So you found yourself in England without any specific job.
Yeah, but on the advance party I'd been sent over. And we'd been told to draw all the equipment for the brigade headquarters,
mm-hmm.
which we did.
Where were you to be stationed?
We were stationed at a camp called Guillemont Camp, just outside of Aldershot,
mm-hmm.
near funny names.
They come and go, don't they?
Yeah.
What was the camp like? Was it Victorian?
No, it was built during the war.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a wooden, much like Gordon Head and
prefabricated buildings.
Yeah, a lot of Nissen huts,
mm-hmm.
and then H huts and so on. Very much like the Canadian Standard camps that we had, like any of them that were built
in Canada.
During the war in Canada. Yeah.
So I suppose you were the first occupants of this new camp.
Pardon?
You were the first occupants of this new camp?
Oh no, others had been in there. The first division had been in there.
Mm-hmm. Before they had gone to the coast?
Before they went out to the coast. So our job, my job, when I reported in the 2nd Div headquarters, They said, get accustomed to the country as fast as you can. Do all the reconnaissance you can. Go out and explore the various roads and so on and so forth, and get a map, read. And that's what I did.
And did they have extensive maps of the areas? Or did you have
good maps. They're all British Ordnance maps.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. I had no difficulty finding my way around. But you didn't get any help from the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
All the road signs were down.
And they were distrustful of anyone?
They would just say, oh, I don't know. Really, I don't know. I'm an evacuee from London. I remember going into a little village called Gomshill and pulling up just to make... I just wanted to check to see where I was. And that's the answer I got. I've just come out of London. I'm an evacuee, and I don't know what anything here.
I suppose you counted by saying I'm a Canadian evacuee.
No, but they're suspicious of anybody.
Especially with your accent.
Well, yes. Well, no. I don't know the accent so much, but they were told as citizens they were not to tell anybody anything, no matter who it was.
Loosely.
They thought I might be a German dressed in Canadian uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of idea.
Mm-hmm. Better be safe than sorry.
So they weren't going to give any comfort to the enemy.
Okay, so I'm going to stop us right there because we're at the end of the tape.
Okay.